How was your vacation? Where did you go?
It was awesome. I went to Italy.
What? That's wild.
It was wild.
Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 144 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at BP. My usual co-hosts are back, Mike Gianella, the BP fantasy team, and BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer. Brett is back from Italy. What's going on, Brett? It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back. Surprised you guys wanted me back.
We had some pretty awesome special guests joining us the last 2 weeks. DJ Short of Roto World, and then we had Chris Towers of CBS Sports as well. So a couple new friends of the pod, but yeah, no, it's no one can replace you, Brett. You're an indispensable part of the podcast, so it's good to have you back, buddy.
Thanks.
Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's great to be back again. My vacation won't be as long as Brett's, but it's coming up a couple weeks, so maybe you guys will find another wonderful guest to look for, but not replace me.
Yeah, I'm going to be taking over your expert fab column then, so I'm not looking forward to that. Maybe less puns in that edition, but we'll see. So we're recording this on Wednesday night. The trade deadline happened two nights ago. We have our big fantasy team recap of the entire trade deadline, breaking down the fantasy implications of every deal that is up at Baseball Prospectus right now. But I do have one small item of banter here. I don't know if you guys caught this, but I do want to promote it because it's a pretty cool event that one of our colleagues, Meg Rowley, is doing. It's at Safeco Field on August 15th. It's celebrating Women in Baseball Night with the Seattle Mariners. So this is a passion, you know, that Meg has put a lot of time in to help organize, and I think it's awesome. So I wanted to take a moment here. If you're in the Seattle area and you're able to go to Safeco Field on August 15th, you should absolutely do that. So I wanted to make sure I plugged that real quick here.
You should definitely do that. Meg is great, and that event sounds really awesome. If it wasn't over 3,000 miles away, I would absolutely be going. But alas, it is. So
yeah, hopefully every team in baseball in the future can put together something like this. So I think this is a great start. So great job, Meg. And if you're in Seattle, absolutely go to this. So as always, a little bit of housekeeping before we dive into the meat of the show. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. If you like the show, you like what we do, that's the best way to support us. Read our content there at BP. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. And I am at George Bissell. If you have a question, that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with us. And if you are listening to this podcast and you like the show, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Radio app, wherever you get your podcasts. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously. So if you have a minute and you like the show, go drop us a line there. That would help us out a lot. So guys, let's talk about the trade deadline. I'm very excited about this show because it was kind of a boring trade deadline as we were, you know, talking amongst ourselves and, you know, shooting emails and texts back and forth. Not a lot happened until about 10 minutes before the deadline there, when all of a sudden, you know, Jeff Passan sends out the cryptic tweet, I think, that Darvish traded, but he didn't specify who. So kind of a boring deadline. And then we had a flurry of activity right there at the end.
It was pretty exciting. It was about 15. It felt like it was like an hour between when he tweeted that out and when we actually found out where he was going. Although the Dodgers were always the most likely destination, but yeah, it was a fun way to end the deadline.
Yeah, so Yu Darvish traded to the Dodgers for Willie Calhoun and a pair of other minor prospects. You know, Brett, if you're just looking at Darvish here, obviously the move to the National League is good for any pitcher, especially an elite starter. But how do you envision this playing out for Darvish? Because he is a free agent at the end of the year, but this seems like maybe the best possible landing spot for him to go to a team that, you know, is just running away with the NL West at this point. Getting out of Texas might be a pretty good thing for his fantasy value.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very good thing. You got the move from the American League to the National League. You got the move from ballpark at Arlington to Dodger Stadium. You've got the move from Jonathan Lucroy to Yasmani Grandal. I mean, every possible thing you can look at in terms of trying to gauge how a pitcher's raw performance will turn into end stats is ticking up for Darvish after this. So, you know, I'm pretty excited as someone who owns Darvish in a couple of leagues, and I think he's poised for a really strong finish here in LA. I think he's, you know, outside of all of the statistical factors, I think he's personality-wise, I think he's a great fit for this organization down the stretch. I think he's the size of his personality can handle the you know, what's probably not what's going to be weirdly a small amount of pressure considering the fame of Yu Darvish, because he doesn't have to be the ace of the Dodgers, but I just think it's a really good fit for him, and something that should certainly help his fantasy value a ton over the last 2 months of the year.
Yeah, I think one of the underrated elements of this type of trade is when you move to a team like the Dodgers, you know, the common thread that you hear is that competition is always a good thing. When you look at having so many talented pitchers on one staff, they're all kind of pushing each other to be better. You know, guys like Alex Wood, Rich Hill, even Kenta Maeda's throwing the ball really well. It's just a loaded rotation. So you get the sense that Darvish is one of those guys who's going to rise to that level and really compete down the stretch. But his strikeout rate is down a little bit this year. The walk rate is fine. You know, if you look at DRA, deserved run average, it's nearly a full run lower than his actual ERA. So I think there is a bit of positive regression progression in store for Darvish. So yeah, I'm with you completely. I really like this move. And Mike, from a fab standpoint, Darvish obviously the biggest name to go over to the NL, and you looked at, we already had Quintana and then we had JD Martinez as well. So if you didn't spend all of your fab already and you have the most still in tow here, this is a pretty nice consolation prize, because it wasn't a guarantee that Darvish was going to get moved at all.
Yeah, you know, before Yu Darvish was traded, and, you know, as Brett said, it seemed like if he did get traded, he was going to the Dodgers. That was the kind of the obvious destination. The Yankees, you know, they got Sonny Gray, but they were never, you know, tied to him. So you kind of knew it, or you thought it would happen. But, you know, we sometimes these things fall through, or, you know, there's not enough of a package there. Yeah, you have to spend your money. I know in, you know, Eric has the most fab in Labor NL, and he was kind of disappointed because he missed out on Jose Quintana and JD Martinez, and Darvish is like a perfect fit for him. You know, over in Tout Wars, which I'm in, you know, this kind of stinks for another ESPN guy. Tristan Cockcroft had the most fab, and somebody last week traded for fab to leapfrog him, because you can do that in Tout. So he won't get Darvish, which, like, you know, really stinks for him, but that's just part of the rules.
That's
there.
Brutal.
That is brutal. I mean, it was like $80 a fab, and I think it was like Real Muto for like a lesser catcher and kind of a second-rate hitter. So, I mean, it worked out. You know, the person who made that trade essentially traded Real Muto for Darvish, which is a pretty good trade in my opinion.
Yeah, that'll work. Their work is done. Let's I hope you got that reference. Brett, let's talk about Sonny Gray here. He's the other big name pitcher on the move. Gray, you know, he's kind of been underwhelming to me. I think he's kind of been overrated for a little while in fantasy. At least it feels that way to me. He's going to the Yankees, and this is obviously, you know, an arrow down move for him, just the on the park factors alone. But what are you expecting here for Sonny Gray the rest of the year? Because he's going to make his first start, I believe, on Thursday, if I'm correct. Let me make sure I'm right. Against the – yeah, he'll be starting on Thursday night against Corey Kluber in Cleveland. So what do you make of Sonny Gray on the Yankees?
I think I think he's got the chance to, you know, be pretty good. His is not quite the move that Darvish's is. You know, is going from Oakland to Yankee Stadium is not a net positive from that standpoint. But you know, the Yankees just have so much more run support to give that the wins should be there a little bit more, although you don't want to specifically count on that. You know, he had six wins so far this year in 16 starts. I mean, he should, if he pitches the way he's capable of, he should, yeah, he might win six games the rest of the way. So you know, the strikeouts are never going to be elite from Gray. They haven't been really since his rookie season, but you know, the ratios should be pretty solid. I think he'll give up a couple more home runs pitching in Yankee Stadium, but you know, overall I think the overall the ratios might be slightly worse, but the strikeouts and wins should go up a little bit. So I think it's mostly neutral for him, but he's been really good. I mean, he's essentially been the same guy he's been for every other year except for 2016. And his career DRAs since his rookie season are 2.66, 3.14, 2.97, 4.11 last year, and then 3.05 this year. So he's right back in that range. He's you know, I think he's a guy you can get away with being your number two starter in fantasy. If he's your number three, that's more ideal. But yeah, I think I have plenty of confidence in him being a strong third starter the rest of the way.
So, Mike, the other shoe to drop on this is what happens to the rest of the Yankee rotation. I think the most likely name to get dropped is probably Jordan Montgomery, the rookie lefty. Do you agree with that, or how do you see the rest of the Yankee rotation shaking out? Because it seems like they have six starters now for five spots, and I'm not sure they want to stay with a six-man rotation for an extended period of time here.
Yeah, Joe Girardi, in fact, was adamant about not wanting to go to a six-man rotation. He doesn't like it. It's not something he's comfortable with. And this week, they're doing it, you know, just to kind of keep everybody in turn before they did. If I had to guess, what will happen is it will be Montgomery. He'll long relief or maybe even AAA. They want to limit his anyway. So this is something that might have happened even if they had somehow missed out on Gray. And, you know, the six-man is Jaime Garcia. That's their, you know, obviously lesser arm that they acquired, but, you know, now they have depth. It's possible, although I wouldn't say it's possible that Luis Severino perhaps, like, skips a turn or you know, a start or two if they have days off. But, yeah, Montgomery is the logical guy. So, you know, if you had him in a deep mixed league, like I have him in labor, you know, he's somebody I'd probably, you know, except like look to reserve or even drop. You know, yeah, I'm looking at Severino right now. Yeah, so Severino, you know, last year, you know, 71 innings, half of those were in starts. You know, year before, 62 innings as a starter. Hasn't really, you know, gone 200 innings in his career. I could see him also losing out a little bit. But my guess is Montgomery.
I think, you know, the
Severino, just to that, I mean, to that point, I mean, those were his major league numbers. I mean, he threw almost 160 innings between the majors and the minors last year.
Yeah, no, I agree, but there's still a difference between 160 and 200 to 220 in the majors in particular, with, you know, in high leverage innings.
No, absolutely. He's got 132 innings now.
Yeah, he's 132 and two thirds.
Yeah, so, you know, even if they didn't ease off of him at all, I think he maybe sniffs 200. Probably doesn't even sniff 200. I think you're right. I think they'll find an excuse to skip him at least once down the stretch. But I think you know, I Severino's been awesome, and I think he's pretty safe in terms of how long he's going to be out there for this year.
Oh yeah, it's more of a work. It's definitely workload as opposed to effectiveness. You know, he's been one of the, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this. There are a lot of people today and yesterday on social media. I think because Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs had an article, you know, singing James Paxton's praises. Severino's been a tick better this year in fantasy. It just seems like he doesn't get the same level of love that Paxton does.
Well, also Sullivan's not. I mean, it's not a fantasy article, so. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but the fantasy guys like Bloomfield, Chris, you know, Towers, who was on our show. I mean, you, George, like everybody. There's a lot of love for Pax and Severino. It's just kind of funny for the year he's having. There's not a lot of discussion.
Yeah, I mean, for as you know, quote unquote, right as I may have been on Paxton, I was equally as wrong on Luis Severino, who I was just not as optimistic about. And you know, Brett, you were one of the drivers early on with him this year on this show, so you know, I'll give you a lot of credit for that. Anything else on Sonny Gray, the Yankees, or anything there? I think that's it.
The only thing I'll add about Gray that I should have mentioned in the trade write up is that, you know, he is a high ground ball. You know, moving to Yankee, I hurt him as much as even, say, Darvish, who I think Darvish is about 42-43% ground balls. Gray is well over 50. So, you know, high, because, you know, it still means he's got a fair amount of fly balls, but he's a ground ball guy.
Yeah. Should we talk about the prospects involved in either of these first two deals? I think Willie Calhoun, who went over to the Rangers, merits a little bit of a mention. One of my favorite kind of guys, and Brett, he snuck in on the midseason top 50 dynasty prospect list that you and Ben Carsley put together. You know, Calhoun's a guy hitting .298 with, he's got 52 extra base hits, 23 homers in the PCL. Not a big strikeout guy either. His issue is that he just can't play defensively anywhere. But now he can potentially DH for the Rangers. So I think this is a really good landing spot here for Willie Calhoun. Like, if you're in a more of a long-term format, if you're looking at this from a dynasty standpoint, like this is big for Willie Calhoun.
Yeah, it's a really good landing spot. Really, anywhere in the American League was going to be a really good landing spot for him. You know, when Ben and I ranked him this mid, you know, in the midseason, I think, you know, there was a feeling that at some point he was going to get moved, whether it was at the deadline this year or whether it was in the off season, just because the Dodgers just don't really have a place for a player like Calhoun. I think it was unlikely they were ever going to seriously give him any run at second base there. But you know, Rangers are a different story. The Rangers have gotten creative with some defensive placements. I mean, they've given Joey Gallo time in the outfield. I could see them giving Calhoun time in left field or just at DH. I mean, they played Shin-Soo Choo in the field this year, so they're a little less concerned about defense, and I think he'll find a place to be hidden on the field while he does what he does at the plate. But he's definitely a very exciting prospect, and now that his path to fantasy value is a little bit clearer, I think it's time to start getting excited about him.
I was already excited, so here we go. I'm very excited. You mentioned some of the Dodgers prospects. I texted you this. I was surprised that they were able to get all of these deals done without giving up a guy like Alex Verdugo, who I think they envision as a guy who can play, you know, anywhere in the outfield with his arm. Walker Buehler, too. They managed to hold on to him. So, yeah, this was a good deadline for the Dodgers. The prospects that the A's picked up here, you know, Brett, you're obviously, you know, you have more of an eye on this than Mike or I do. So Jorge Mateo we have as an arrow up, just because there may be more opportunity for him in Oakland. He feels to me like a guy who's just kind of stagnated a little bit developmentally. Is that a fair characterization, or am I wrong on that?
I mean, it's not entirely unfair, but he's at Double A now and he's hitting at Double A. So, you know, he's at least a full step closer to returning fantasy value than he was at the beginning of the year. I mean, last year was a pretty dead year for him. you know, and he was sort of a forgotten man on a lot of dynasty radars and lists and stuff. But you know, I think we've, you know, Ben and I have helped pretty strong that we think he's got a good chance to be a really strong contributor. And you know, that speed gives him such a floor. You know, we talked about it on Tino, I think a couple weeks of maybe maybe like a month or two ago when he got to double A and was raking a little bit around the time of the rankings. But he's, you know, there's such a premium on speed. You look at the guys who are being started in fantasy leagues in, you know, 14 to 16 team mixed leagues, and you know, that those are all things that Mateo can do. You know, what Gerard Dyson is doing, what Delino DeShields has done, you know, and that's close to the, you know, worst case scenario where he's just not really much besides speed and the occasional home run. But you know, I think Oakland will give him much more run out there. There's more opportunity for him to play. They can stick him in a couple of spots. They can really just put him wherever they don't put Franklin Barreto, and kind of watch him go from there.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot in the show, but the issue that a lot of these speed oriented profiles have, it's a problem of perception, just because they're viewed as bad hitters, so they're less palatable to the average fantasy owner, I think, who's not paying attention to the landscape and some of those contextual factors. So that's a really great point. To kind of round out the prospect side of things here, Mike, with Calhoun coming over, if you're in an AL only league, like, what kind of a fab bid would you have on him in a redraft? Because I think there's a chance he's up in September. Like, if the Rangers really have nothing to play for, I think they owe it to themselves to see if Calhoun can get it done at the major league level. So would you be aggressive on him, or how do you view him as someone who I know is more geared towards the only landscape than I am?
Well, you're talking about a redraft, so you need to be aggressive, because honestly, what you're looking at there is you're probably looking at one of the better players who's going to come up. You know, just by the time September rolls around, you're just looking for anyone who can help you at all. I mean, honestly, if you're like Tout, where you can stash a minor leaguer, you know, beyond that, I can't, like, in a 15 team mix speculating, just because, yeah, maybe he'll be up, but at some point, I think they might look at it like, you know what, we could bring him up, but also it just doesn't make a difference. He just changes organizations. I'm kind of fine with it, though, in AL only, as a, you know, put your bid in there if he's up, and, you know, put down most, if not all, of your money and just see what happens.
Okay, so
if he's up, he could be fun. I agree
with
that.
No, absolutely. I think it's worth a speculative play. I ended up writing the Calhoun section of this piece, so yeah, I'm with you there. Let's I don't want to talk a lot about closers here, but I think maybe the other real fantasy relevant guy who was traded is Jonathan Lucroy. He's had a pretty dismal campaign when you look at what he did in Texas this year. 242 average, on base percentage under 300, only 4 home runs and just over 300 plate appearances. Not striking out at all, but just a ton of weak contact. Just not great for Lucroy. But Brett, this is about as good as it's going to get for a landing spot. And if you don't have the fab to get a guy like Darvish, you missed out on Quintana or Martinez, this is a pretty nice leftover piece to be bidding on if you're in an NL only.
Yeah, it is. I'm not confident in Lucroy the rest of the way. I mean, obviously, if you could choose to put any struggling player somewhere, you choose to put him in Coors, but Lucroy has been the worst player in baseball this year, and it's not even really close. Some of that is because of his defense, and you know, I sort of alluded to this when I was talking about the upgrade that Yasmani Grandal would be over him for Yu Darvish. But it's really, really bad. He's been At this rate, he will be over a negative two win player, which is just really impressive for someone who was an MVP candidate for a couple of years not very long ago.
Like last year, he hit 11 home runs in under 200 plate appearances when he got traded to Texas. Like this is kind of shocking that he's declined this quickly, right? Like this is not expected at all.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely not. You know, we talk about catchers having really strange career arcs. Usually we talk about that in the context of what happens on the front end, and that, you know, some catchers just kind of pop up out of nowhere, but they also kind of disappear almost just as quickly sometimes. And I'm not on sort of that bandwagon that Lucroy is, you know, never going to be a productive fantasy bat again. But, you know, there's really been very little in his profile this year that gives me any sort of confidence that he's going to bounce back and be particularly effective down the stretch. A 218 true average, which is funny enough, is the exact same true average as Tony Walters, who he's replacing on the Rockies roster. But, you know, that's below Ichiro. That's below Marco Hernandez. I mean, it's below Tyler Collins. This is almost irredeemable territory right here, at least for the current season. So
irredeemable territory, that should be the name of the podcast. Mike, are you with Brett here on Lucroy? I mean, because let's be honest, like Coors is a good place to hit, and Lucroy, yes, he sucked, but he is putting a ton of balls in play, and at some point, you know, you're going to get some BABIP luck. And Coors, is there any reason for optimism after such a really dark dark outlook there on Lucroy from Brett? I mean, is there any reason for optimism here?
No, and you know, I look at it like he's I know I could have just said no and stopped, but
he's that would have been great.
Yeah, he's just moving. It'd be one thing if he was moving from a pitcher's park to Colorado. Texas is a pretty good hitter's park too. It's not like he's suddenly like, oh yeah, he was, you know, in this terrible place to hit. Now he's in Coors. He was in a really good place to hit. So I don't know what's wrong with him. The ground ball rate is 56%. You know, it's really odd too because he's making more contact than he's made in the past. His strikeout rate is really low, but it's just crappy contact. Like that's kind of what it comes down to. He's making really crappy contact, and almost no matter where he plays, it's probably not going to do much for him. Now, of course, now watch him go out and hit like 10 to 12 home runs like the rest of the way. I mean, that's kind of the thing. It could happen just because sometimes weird things in baseball happen. But as far as betting on it, I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, so, I mean, Lucroy, you talk about Lucroy's ground ball rate, which is really important to note. He's at 56%. This is not like a guy who was around 50% or so. Last year, he was at 37%. He's 42% for his career. This is an extreme outlier, and he's making a ton of contact, but he's just rolling over on everything. And, you know, it's strange, and the pitchers are noticing. Pitchers are throwing him more strikes because they don't think he can do a ton of damage. And the more strikes he gets thrown, the more weak contact he hits. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's not good.
No, see, I have a board bet with a friend of the pod, Ryan Bloomfield, from May 1st on, Gary Sanchez versus Jonathan Lucroy. So, sorry, Ryan, I think I'm taking this one. We might be able to call it at this point even. So, Jonathan Lucroy, he kind of sucks. All right, let me open up the floor here. Why don't you guys tell me which trade you thought was interesting from a fantasy standpoint? Because most of these just kind of suck. Like, Tim Beckham to the Orioles, AJ Ramos to the Mets, Alex Avila and Justin Wilson to the Cubs. Like these don't have massive fantasy implications, but which one interests you the most? And I'll start with you, Mike. Which trade are you going with here that you think matters from a fantasy standpoint?
Well, I think the Ramos trade matters only if Kyle Bearclaw is healthy. I know you've been a fan of his in the past.
Not this year,
but we just saw a little flip there, and that was a surprising trade. Not so much that Ramos got traded, but that he went to the Mets. When you looked at it after, it made sense because, you know, the window is still open for the Mets in terms of their team. It just wasn't working for them this year. You know, so it makes sense. I got a replacement for Reed, and, you know, they just didn't, like, go, well, we'll go out in the free agent market and buy an expensive closer, which is what they would have had to have done, or I should say an expensive setup if Familia's healthy. But, you know, that Florida bullpen, you know, I know you don't want to talk about relievers. You know, right now it's Brad Ziegler, and it could be him. You know, he's been fine in the past, but I just have no faith in him based on what he did prior to his injury. You know, so Bearclaw is a guy in deeper leagues I'd be snatching up and, you know, just kind of see what happens. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, that's fine. But even though the numbers overall are down, he's still striking guys out.
Brett, give me a trade that you think has pretty big fantasy implications here, or could.
I am going to talk about the Francisco Liriano trade.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, and not for Liriano. I like Liriano. I think he's actually, I think Liriano could be really effective for Houston out of the bullpen, but that's not what anybody cares about. What people care about is that now Derek Fisher is going to play more often, and you know, I think he could be a really interesting spark plug for fantasy teams down the stretch. He's got power, he's got speed, he's been making solid contact with a pretty good approach in his first little taste of the majors. Houston's a friendly place to hit. That lineup, even with Springer and Correa out for now, that lineup still scores a bunch of runs. So he could really help in counting stats. I think that, you know, he is one of the biggest beneficiaries of the trade deadline moves, and for those leagues that he's still available in, he's definitely worth jumping on to see if he can kind of keep things going.
Yeah, I'm with you. That power speed combo is insanely valuable. And I love how, you know, some fantasy owners get excited about some of the bigger name prospects, but it's like Fisher's not all that different than any of those guys. Like Clint Frazier, for example. Like there's not a huge gap in value between someone like that or a Lewis Brinson type and Fisher for me. So yeah, I think
2017.
Right.
I agree with you. For this context, yes.
No, for the rest of this season, I think, yeah, obviously. I just think because he was up and then he gets sent back down, it kind of skews the perception of him a little bit. So, I'd be all over Fisher. The only note I want to make here is Shane Green appears to have a pretty firm hold on the Detroit Tigers closer role now. I know that's that's like being a drummer in Spinal Tap, you know, it's kind of not or Defense Against the Dark Arts professor at Hogwarts. Like there's you should be nervous if you hold that job, but Green's looked pretty good. I think he had a two inning save against the Yankees. He picked up another save today. We're recording this on Wednesday in the rain delay game that stretched like half the day. So Shane Green here, he's kind of excelled in that role, and his numbers on the season are really crazy good. So I know Shane Green sucked us in a few years ago, and we all got burned. Well, some of us.
You guys got burned.
Me. Like, if you listen to Brett, you didn't. But, like, idiots like me got burned.
I don't think I had him anywhere.
Oh, all right. So it was just me. The hell with it. I'm an idiot. Shane Green's starting pitcher was a painful time in my life, at least. And now apparently he's a lights out closer. So that's how baseball works. Go pick up Shane Green. Anybody else here that we need to discuss? Because there's minor stuff like closers, like Brandon Kinsler went to the Nationals, you know, whatever.
The Jeremy Hellickson trade is just kind of sad.
He's pitching well tonight, isn't he?
He is.
He's throwing. He has seven shutout innings right now against the Royals, but it's the Royals.
Of course he does.
The trade itself was just kind of sad.
My favorite move was Addison Reed to the Red Sox because he gave up that home run and Red Sox Nation freaked out, which is classic Boston. Okay, cool. We have two call-ups to talk about. There's not a lot in terms of current events. Johnny Cueto is out with a flexor strain. He might be done for the year. Like, that's not good. Max Scherzer left his start early last night with neck spasms. That appears to be nothing. Before we do the call-ups, Mike, here's one thing. Freddie Freeman's going back to first base full-time. He's going to fall a couple games short of third base eligibility. That matters because I think he would have been a lot more valuable heading into next season in redraft leagues if he had gained that sort of eligibility. I think maybe then you have
how
a case.
How many games did he wind up with?
16.
He was a couple short.
He'll be eligible in Tout Wars then because Tout Wars is a 15-game requirement. So keep that in mind if you're in a league like that. I know that he's eligible in Yahoo, but the joke is that everybody is eligible in Yahoo.
So we had him outside. I know whenever we've talked about Freddie Freeman, we've kind of said, well, be cautious. He's not a first rounder. Where do we sort of stand on him for next year at this point? Is he more of a second, third round guy? Or Mike, where do you stand on Freeman right now if you had to ballpark it at this time?
Well, I'm higher on him now than I was. I'd probably put him, though, like I'd still second round, like probably beginning of the second round. And it's not so much a knock on Freeman. It's more how the landscape has changed with power.
Yeah.
I really want to get, if I'm going to spend on somebody like that in the first round, I want someone like Paul Goldschmidt that has some speed tied to his power, or I even want like somebody who is primarily a speed guy. Like I really want to avoid taking somebody. I know Freeman runs a little bit, you know, it's not that simple, but I still kind of just outside of the first.
Yeah, Freeman's going to be one of those guys like Anthony Rizzo has been this year, where if you pick towards the back half, if you pick towards the back of the first round in leagues, you kind of keep your fingers crossed, hoping someone's going to take him ahead of you, so you end up with somebody else that you want.
right.
But yeah, he's a second rounder for me. He's really good, but Mike hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's not enough to be a first baseman who hits for power anymore. It's just not.
Brett, Freddie Freeman or Anthony Rendon, 2018.
Freeman, but it's close.
Mike, Freddie Freeman or Justin Upton, who's having a really good year.
Yeah, he is, but I still want Freeman. I don't think that one is particularly close.
Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts, Mike?
I still believe enough in Betts that I know, you know what? People are going to have this the other way, but I would take Betts over Freeman. I still believe in Mookie Betts.
How is that really? How is that even close?
I'm just saying. Mookie Betts has kind of been underwhelming. I know I shouldn't complain, but he kind of has been a little bit.
Mookie Betts has not been underwhelming.
A little bit.
I will. No, you're in Boston. I know how that gets. Yeah, Mookie Betts is on pace to go 25-25 with 100 runs and 100 RBI. Yeah, the batting average is a little bit low, but that he's striking out even less than last year. I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. I would easily have Betts in my top five right now for next year, and it's not close.
Okay, I'm just checking in. All right, last one, I promise. Cody Bellinger or Freddie Freeman, Brett?
Freeman, not even close. I have a feeling I'm going to be the low guy on Bellinger next year.
I'm just telling you, prepare for these debates this offseason. It's going to happen. Like, we're going to have these types of discussions. I can tell you right now.
You didn't even bring up Aaron Judge.
No, I don't want to do that. I'm we're gonna leave Aaron Judge alone for a few months and see where we are in the offseason. But yeah, Anthony Rendon might be a first round pick. I'm slowly coming around to this idea, Brett. I'm almost there.
Anthony Rendon is
he's an incredible
hitter.
He's so effing good. Let's talk about two prospects who got called up real quick. Mike, I'll go to you first because you're a Mets fan. You're more than qualified to talk about this guy. Ahmed Rosario. He's had an interesting start to his major league career in his debut last night. We were watching it as it happened. You know, I think the biggest thing he brings to the table is speed. But what do you see here for Rosario rest of the season from a Mets standpoint?
Well, rest of the season, you know, so the Mets have already talked about rotating him in and not quite playing him every day and being cautious with his usage, which I think that actually makes some sense. You know, I know the Mets get ridiculed for nearly every decision they make, but, you know, he hasn't played, you know, his seasons have ended early because he's in the minor leagues or he's been, you know, earlier on, he's been in rookie ball. So his value this year, his fantasy value is not really going to be as high as, you know, based on the hype, at least, as perhaps some people were expecting. Rosario is a guy I really like long-term. I think this year and even next year, you're not looking at somebody who's going to have a huge fan impact. You know, a lot of what's going to come down to is his legs. If he runs, you know, 19 steals in 25 attempts at AAA, if he runs, you know, if he can turn that speed into, like, 40, 50 steal potential, obviously his value. I just don't necessarily see that. I don't see that in part two because the Mets, like, just aren't one of those teams. That's not really their MO. So I hate comps, but I kind of made this comp. Rosario to me is what JP Crawford was before Crawford had kind of fallen off the map the last year and a half. I know Crawford's been better in the last month, but I look at Rosario as somebody who great defense, good athleticism, a really good player in real life. I don't see the fantasy payoff coming probably for a couple of years. I think there's going to be an adjustment period for him in the majors. He's 21 years old.
Yeah, if you're stashing him all of this year, like from the you know, like March on, I think that was kind of a mistake. Like, he just wasn't going to make a huge impact, especially when they kept pushing.
Yeah, unless you're an NL only, obviously.
Right, unless he was getting called up in, you know, May 1st. I didn't really see it. So, Brett, you had Rosario, you know, I think he was in your top five, right, in the midseason update for Dynasty prospects. Tell us about you know, obviously Rosario maybe not going to make a huge impact this year, but long term, I mean, we're talking about a guy who could be very, very valuable in fantasy given the current sort of state of stolen bases.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be a, you know, a batting champ or a 25 home run hitter. But, you know, 25 to 30 steals and all around contribution elsewhere from a shortstop is something that could be really, really valuable in this day and age. So, you know, I think, you know, he might take a little while to get there. I think he'll, you know, I think he'll have ups and downs this year. I think he'll probably have ups and downs next year also. He's, you know, he's really young. But once he settles in, I think, you know, I think he could be the kind of fantasy shortstop that people thought Francisco Lindor was going to be before everyone realized that Lindor was better than we thought he was going to be. If that makes sense.
Lindor is pretty good. The other guy who got called up is Ozzie Albies. He's going to play second base primarily. They're going to put Johan Camargo at short. Dansby Swanson is in Gwinnett trying to figure out his issues. Albies batted .285 in 97 games, 21 steals, was only caught twice, 9 home runs. So I think Albies is a little bit overrated given that he's a better real-life prospect than he is a fantasy prospect, but the speed does have some value. But what do you envision here for Ozzie Albies, Brett?
Did you love Jose Peraza? Because
no,
that's what you're getting with Albies. I mean, he's stolen bases, maybe some average if you're lucky, and nothing else.
Yep.
But, you know, I'd make the argument that he is more valuable in fantasy than in real life, just because I don't think he's going to be the world's greatest real life player. I think he's sort of a, you know, an average everyday player in real life. I think if he, you know, if he's able to hit well enough to, you know, to steal 40 bases, then that's, you know, that's really valuable these days in fantasy leagues.
I just think, like, the average everyday regular who's under team control for 6 years, like, that to me seems crazy valuable now. So that's why I think I have that perception of him. But yeah, I'm just not as excited about Albies. Where did he rank on the midseason list? I feel like he was like 2022 ish. Was that right?
I don't remember off the. I don't have it in front of me. I feel like he was around 30, but that just.
Cool. That's it, guys. Let's do some quick Twitter. I ask for these every week, so look, we appreciate everybody who has taken the time here to send in questions. Let's see. This first one's from Nori Ochi. That's just. It makes me think of Nori Aoki. He asks, which stars down 2017 could be the beginning of a downward slide or just needs a mulligan and we'll be back in 2018? So, yeah, this is the beginning of the end for Jonathan Lucroy, I'm sorry to say. But Mike or Brett, whoever wants to jump on this one, but who do you see as someone who's having kind of a miserable season that could turn things around? Like, to me, the obvious name is, like, Carlos Gonzalez. Like, it feels weird that he's all of a sudden just done at, like, 31. But who's someone that you guys think could turn it around next year? Or this is the beginning of the end for them?
Well, I would say the opposite about Cargo. I really don't have a good feeling about him watching him. Like, he just looks like a mess, and I really don't have a good feeling about him going forward. I know he's not old, but I feel like players with that profile who are kind of getting hurt and don't do well. You know, if you want to be more positive, somebody I do like who gets maligned here, who I still have faith in, is Odubel Herrera. You know, Herrera very quietly has built his value back up. He's still more of a deep mixed or an only guy right now, but I still have faith in him. He's really young. He's 25 years old. You know, as has been pointed out, you know, he kind of missed some of that or a lot of that high minors experience. So some of what goes on with him with like the mental mistakes is certainly curable. And he's a hitter when he's on and when he's playing well and it's all going well for him. He's just a dynamic player. I still believe that he could be, if not a top tier fantasy player, maybe the next level down.
All right, so this next question is from CJ. He wants to know about Victor Robles' potential for 2018. Brett, on a scale of 1 to 10, how exciting is Victor Robles right now?
I mean, he's extremely exciting. I don't know how much of that excitement is going to be necessarily warranted in 2018. I think we'll see him in 2018, but I don't think that... I don't think he's going to be a huge impact player then. I think he's someone who's going to have to kind of grow into his all around contribution. But yeah, you're talking about a potential, you know, first round pick in fantasy leagues if everything develops right.
What's crazy is just how many elite sort of skills he has. Like, you just don't find that combination of talent all in one guy. It's just really rare. So yeah
it is.
I think Brent Hershey, who's of Baseball HQ, he had a tweet tonight. He timed Robles sub 4 home to first, so that's very fast.
He's really fast. I want to throw one thing out. I was going to jump in after Mike was talking about. I completely agree with Mike on Herrera. The one thing I'm just going to say, because no one needs to hear me talk more about this, but Kyle Schwarber's line since coming back up from AAA, 259, 348, 603 for 952 OPS. Guys, he's good. He's really good.
I'm gonna if they listen to this, I'm gonna get them in trouble. But I was at the Phillies, one of the Phillies games last week with the ESPN guys, and they were really down on Schwarber. They just have no faith in him whatsoever.
I think when we look back on it, we're all gonna be like, okay, we were duped by, you know, a half season of plate appearances with a guy coming off a serious knee injury, who hadn't really rehabbed and faced pitching at the major league level. So I think that's gonna be the narrative long term. But yeah.
Well, that's my feeling on Schwarber. I'm not as excited as Brett is, but I do like him. If anything hurts Schwarber, it's just contextually that there's this mass of hitters out there, like hitting for power, who don't run and aren't necessarily high average guys. But I do agree with what Brett's saying. I think Schwarber, you know, in the long term will not only be fine, he'll be an above average hitter. He's a good hitter.
If he were DHing on a bad American League team, I think we'd all be a lot more excited about him long term. It's just in context of the rest of that Cubs team, he just, you know, doesn't look like a superstar, I guess. I don't know. Bill McKnight, he wants to know, Luis Castillo or Jose Ureña rest of season? I'm gonna go Castillo, but anybody disagree?
I'd go with Castillo too.
It's Castillo, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Urania's—he's had some really, really bad starts this year, so I'd be nervous. This next question is from Ryan Martins. He wants to know if Matt Chapman can be in the same category of some of the more elite third baseman in the game at some point. Do we? I wouldn't put him up there with a Donaldson, Arenado, or Machado, any of those guys. But what does the ceiling look like for Matt Chapman?
The good version of Trevor Plouffe.
I'll take it. Sam G wants to know. I think this is the last question, guys. Better option rest of season. Yes, Jonathan Lucroy or Brian McCann. I picked up Lucroy post trade, but don't really want to carry two catchers on my roster. I think I know where we're gonna go with this one. Lucroy or McCann, guys?
Yeah, McCann struggled a lot recently, but it has to be him, at least until we see any more from
Yeah, it's still McCann, and Brett's right. He has struggled. I know he hasn't. He didn't have the best July, but it's really difficult to go with Lucroy. Like if you're taking Lucroy over McCann, you're kind of throwing a Hail Mary at this point, where you're hoping that Coors does the trick. But there's nothing there to indicate that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm never a big fan of when you don't have a solution at a position, just throwing more roster spots, like committing more resources to the problem. I just think you have to sort of cut your losses and just pick one guy. Like it, you know, just go with one catcher. Don't try and platoon multiple guys. That'd be my stance. All right, so let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 144 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. We have a ton of great content going out right now. We have all of the trade deadline breakdowns. If you like this show, the transaction analysis team, like, and the prospect team and the rest of the fantasy team, they did a really great job. We covered every trade. So it's all up there at BP. Subscribe and you can read it today. If you do the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. We always get flooded this time of year, so make sure you sign up for the Bat Signal. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Brett Sayer BP, at Mike Gianella, and at George Bissell. If you like the show, you want to leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher Radio app, whatever you use to listen to the show, please do that. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously. One final note here before we depart. I want to just say quickly, dedicate this show to, we lost a good writer and analyst and someone who a lot of us knew, John Argello of at Cubs Den on Twitter. You know, you probably follow him. He passed away last week, so just wanted to say quickly, thoughts and prayers are with his family, and rest in peace, John. A lot of people cared about you, and we're going to miss you. So that's it. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. For Brett Sayre, Mike Gianella, at George Vessel saying so long, everybody. Welcome to episode 144 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at oh my God. I'm a writer at that's great.